This is
Tears of Scrutiny. Hi there, I'm Eva Ethan.
And I'm Bari Sedona.
And welcome to Tears of Scrutiny.
So, what? New podcast name? What the heck?
Exactly. So we renamed our podcast. We just felt like it was a better fit for our vibe, and it's also like a little bit of a pun. We'll explain that at some point in some episode. But don't worry, nothing has changed in terms of the content we're putting out. On today's episode of Tears of Scrutiny, we're going to be talking about a case called Alan B. Milligan, previously named Merrill V. Milligan. We've discussed this before, but it was before the decision itself was released.
So basically, it was consolidated with Alan v. Castor, and the decision was a 5-4 decision, which, if you remember our Merrill v. Milligan episode, we were not expecting. And it, you know, was in favor of the voters, which we'll talk a little bit about after we go over kind of what happened in the case itself. So after the 2020 census, Alabama created a new map with districts for the 2022 midterm election, just like every other state did.
So one out of seven districts in Alabama was a majority-minority district. And a majority-minority district is a district in which majority of the people are from a minority racial or ethnic group. And about 27% of the population of Alabama is African-American. Taking this into account, there should be two majority-minority districts. So voting in Alabama is divided on racial lines, as is true for most of the Deep South, I'd say. So people tend to, like, people within certain minority groups really tend to vote a certain way. And that's especially true for African Americans in the Deep South, who tend to vote blue overwhelmingly. And basically the voter said, okay, the map that you guys have created for this election, based on the census, is a violation of the section two of the VRA, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And it's racially discriminatory, and it disadvantages us and dilutes our vote.
So section two of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 prohibits racially discriminatory voting practices. And it's based on the circumstances that show that racial minorities have less opportunity than other voters. So again, when you think about the Voting Rights Act of 1965, we're thinking civil rights movement, you know, everything that's going on then. And that's really important to kind of understanding the piece of legislation and also understanding where it stems from, which is the 15th Amendment and the Reconstruction era following the Civil War and following kind of this time of, you know, rights for the freedmen, rights for the people who had recently been freed. And one of those rights was the right of, you know, political power, being able to vote.
Suffrage.
And within that 15th Amendment, you know, there's a clause like the other Reconstruction amendments where the legislature is able to, Congress is able to enforce the amendments. And, you know, that enforcement is shown through the Voting Rights Act of 1965, albeit, you know, a century later, but still.
Absolutely. I think Section 2 is historically super, super litigated and debated and super contentious as an act. I mean, as a section of the Voting Rights Act, in the sense that, I mean, we're seeing this now with Alan B. Milligan, but what is the role of, like, racial, like, voting and racial redistricting and that kind of thing? So with this case, we had the majority opinion, which was written by Chief Justice John Roberts. And the majority was comprised of Roberts, Kagan, Sotomayor, Jackson, and Kavanaugh. And Roberts delivered the opinion except for one little part of it called Part 3B1.
And the reason that, in the first place, this decision was such a surprise was that the Supreme Court had the chance to step in, and the lower court had agreed with the challengers to the maps and said, yes, this is likely a violation of Section 2. The Supreme Court stepped in and was like, no, actually, it's not. Use these maps in a shadow docket decision, which is something we've talked about before. The shadow docket is like when, you know, the Supreme Court takes a decision without having the oral argument and actual hearings and kind of just releases it.
And as, like, the aftermath of that was Republicans went on to win six of those seven House seats in November. So I was shocked.
That's what was really surprising, because it was like,
well, you did this.
Yeah.
And you cleared the path for this to happen. And now you're changing it. I'm glad they're changing it. But.
And I think some of that reason, I was listening to a podcast called Strict Scrutiny, and that they were talking about how one of the reasons is that when it comes to voting changes, there's, you know, a certain time period that they want to do it within.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought that it was too close to the election in November to, I think they made it in February to, you know, change the map.
Absolutely. That makes sense. But, you know, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Part 3B1.
So part 3B1 kind of concerns the difference between racial motivation and whether or not something happens, but it ends up having, like, as an effect.
Yeah.
And it kind of, the three liberal justices wrote this part, and in that part, they're kind of talking about how the effect is kind of what we should look at rather than just the motivation. But I think that's where Kavanaugh and Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Roberts kind of differ, is that they're saying, no, there is a separation that's been set by previous court precedent, and we should respect that.
I think it's just a very interesting argument, because I've had it with, and I've noticed the sort of distinction between liberals and conservatives in this sense, because I've had a lot of, like, conservatives say to me that they think intention matters a lot. It's not just about outcome. Like, if you didn't set out with this intention of harming somebody or hurting somebody, then, like, there's a little bit of credence that should be applied to that. There's a little bit of grace that should be applied to that. Whereas liberals tend to say, it really doesn't matter. It really isn't that relevant whether or not you intended to do something if you ended up doing it anyway. So like, whether or not Alabama legislators set out with the intention of disadvantaging and crippling Black people and their political power is, in the minds of the conservative justices, like, extremely, extremely important. You know?
Yeah, because I think also what they were kind of looking at within the arguments as well is they were looking at the Alabama litigators brought a bunch of, you know, maps that were drawn by technology to be race neutral. And they were like, look, some of these disadvantaged, you know, Black Americans, is this something that's a problem? And during the arguments, you know, it seemed like this is also why people didn't expect the ruling to be this way. It seemed like the justices were more on the favor inside of Alabama in that sense. But, you know, as it turns out, you know, the maps did disadvantage people on the basis of race. So that's kind of, you know, where the problem is. And the court believed that the lower court applied the Jingles precedent correctly. So there was a case called Thornburg v. Jingles, which occurred in 1986. And it outlines a three-part test to evaluate claims brought under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. So this is to decide whether or not a new map, you know, violates the Voting Rights Act. And the three parts are that the racial or language minority group is sufficiently large and geographically compact to constitute a majority in a single member district. The minority group is also politically cohesive, which means that they vote similarly, which of course we know is the case in Alabama. And the majority votes sufficiently as a bloc to enable it, usually to defeat the minority's preferred candidate. So basically, the majority votes are able to beat out the minority.
Sort of dilute, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so we had our four dissenters as well, Thomas, Gorsuch, Barrett, and Alito. And they referred to the majority as a plurality, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, a plurality vote, for those of y'all who are not familiar, is when a vote is kind of like a tie. Yeah. For example, there's a really important case on book bans, and that decision was 4-4. Mm-hmm. And because of that tie, it really can't stand for precedent.
Yeah, it's really sort of just null and void. Nothing is done with it.
Yeah.
Basically, they couldn't come to a conclusion, but it's not really a plural.
Yeah. And I think that the reason is that perhaps, and again, this is something that may have happened, and I saw, you know, that I think Justice Kavanaugh was kind of the tiebreaker in this case. And I think potentially he had joined the minority and the dissenters, and potentially he may have
just left.
And that's why they call it might be a plurality decision.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's also because Justice Kavanaugh and Chief Justice Roberts don't join on that one particular part of the decision.
I think this is just another example of Kavanaugh and Roberts being these sort of moderate swing votes that really end up determining these pivotal cases. We really don't know which way they're going to go. On Dobbs, we saw that happen. On this one, we saw that happen. I think Roberts and Kavanaugh are taking up the role that, I guess, Anthony Kennedy had back in the time of, like, Obergefell and that kind of thing, where they're tie-breaking votes, and we don't know how the chips will fall.
Yeah.
But with this one, we saw it come out in favor of the voters, and that was unexpected, I think, for both of us.
And I think also a lot of people are using this as kind of a litmus test for how the decision in the two students for fair admission cases, the two affirmative action cases regarding UNC and Harvard will turn out. A lot of them believe that this means that affirmative action is here. A lot of people believe that it means affirmative action is here to stay.
I don't know if I would buy that.
Yeah. And I think that there's also a really important in Justice Kavanaugh's, in his concurring opinion, he kind of talks about the difference between legislative precedent and constitutional precedent. And I think he does this to address Dobbs and address how people might say, oh, but you guys were perfectly fine with overturning precedent in Dobbs. You know, why didn't you do it here? And he's like, hold up. Dobbs was set by constitutional precedent, Roe. I mean, of course, he doesn't explicitly mention the cases, but
we can read it.
I think that's what he's talking about. And I think the same thing will go for affirmative action, which, as we know, is not codified into law.
Yeah, so when we have we have concepts and we have ideas that aren't baked into law, so to speak.
They're saying that same-sex marriage, for example,
that's scary.
I mean, Respect for a Marriage Act was passed, but I don't know if that's the extent, I don't know if that's enough to say that same-sex marriage is codified.
Yeah.
But that's another example of something that's a right that's protected by the Supreme Court, you know, not necessarily by legislation.
Yeah. So that's interesting that they're being consistent, at least with that, because they are sort of, they have in the past term been very deferential in how they're deciding things, as opposed to they're not, you know, activists or whatever. Which I can appreciate the consistency and lack of hypocrisy, at least.
Yeah.
But with this case, I think it does a lot of good for civic efficacy and people feeling like their votes count for something.
Definitely. Yeah. Go democracy.
Go democracy. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how Moore v. Harper, which is another case to do with gerrymandering, but in North Carolina, plays out, because it is very similar. But I also could see it playing out completely differently.
Yeah, so. Which, by the way, go listen to our episode on Moore v. Harper if you haven't yet. Anyways, I think that's all we have for you guys today. Big win in Alabama, especially for Black American voters there. I wonder how this will impact the 2024 election, if at all. You know, we talked about this, but people, you know, tend to vote with their race, especially because so many issues
tend to be sort of racially directed and targeted. But I say it's a win not just for Black voters, but for all voters, and not just in Alabama, all across the country. I think the precedent will stand. Stare decisis, I think this will be utilized to evaluate race districting throughout the country for decades to come.
Yeah, and I think especially being in a state like North Carolina, this is important precedent
for
litigators to take advantage of and to ensure that the votes of people are not being diluted on the basis of race.
Exactly. See you guys in 3 weeks.